racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Colin Ford and myself are here, but we're going to go straight to Bathurst and the press conference to give you an idea of how the cars were, talking to the second place drivers at the moment.
The overheated of the tyres, I just didn't have enough on the last five or six laps to zero in on them. But very pleased with second. It's a great day's work. Ian did a good job all day. Jason did a great job, and we'll just have to take it next time. I'm finished second twice.
Jason, you've had the pleasure of winning it in 1998, stepping back into a V8 supercar after a stint out, but second is a great result for yourself.
Yeah, it is. Full credit to Paul, full credit to the Shell team. They got two cars over the finish line today, and they were strong all day. We just didn't have the luck. That last pit stop that we made was, we just had called out. We were leading the field, and we went straight to the back. So, full credit to Paul to get it all the way back through.
And first place K-Mart Racing, duo of Stephen Richards and Greg Murphy. Going for an unlikely hat-trick, Stephen, and you also win today, Greg, but it might have looked unlikely half-race just if you didn't get on the podium, so a great result in the end.
Yeah, definitely. The K-Mart Racing team today, really, they gave us the car, even with an overheating engine, we managed to do, 140 laps, so full credit to them. Our result, based on the fact that they did such a good job. And Nurse last into hold out Stevie Johnson was unreal.
But you did have Stephen bearing down on you, a similar situation to Garth. It looked like the Shelley Stadium was going to catch you, and then you seemed to step up a gear and hold him up.
Steve said we were hoping for him to stay wet because the car was actually performing quite good, and we were catching Garth in the wet. And then it started to dry up, and we sort of knew we'd be in a bit of trouble. The engine was actually last 15 minutes at 140 degrees, so it's not supposed to be that hot. So we were really struggling. I didn't know if it was going to last. And the guys just said, well, there's no point in coming in. We just got to keep going. And we kept going, and the engine held together. And it's over there at the moment, cooking itself stupid. So we're not going to get much out of that one. So Steve did a great job, and really the guys got us here on the podium today. And the pits, they did a sensational job. Strategy-wise, they just called it unbelievably well. And they just kept us at the front all day long. And, we led the race, and we were pretty strong, but we just couldn't hold out some of the other cars down the straight.
So there's plenty of
questions. And we might go to Macau straight away as, as I say that, Colin Ford, welcome to the show, because they've just gone to the Chinese version.
That's right. People may not understand the broadcast, what they do for the Macau Grand Prix. They alternate between English, Mandarin Chinese, and Portuguese. So you get a lap of the commentator giving you the English commentary, then you get a lap of the Mandarin commentary, then a lap of Portuguese, and you come back to the English again. It makes it very, very confusing. But a day of racing up at Bathurst that, to say the least, was really quite fraught with danger, given the race conditions are up there, the rain and everything that was going on during the day. Not as bad as I've seen at Bathurst in the past, but in terms of the drivers, pretty rough.
We'll be going back to Bathurst in just a few moments. The beauty of landlines is, and if someone gets cut off and the people there don't hang up the phone again, you can't call them back. And being in the press conference and all, they don't like ringing phones that much. So what we'll do is we'll have a chat about this marathon, the 7-hour trek around the mountain, which Colin was won, of course, by Garth Pander. And his teammate, Jason Barguana, they did everything they possibly could to try and win the championship, except take Scaife and Lowndes out of the race, or back behind 17th place.
Well, that's right. Well, Scaife and Lowndes knew exactly where they had to finish to win the championship for Mark Scaife. As it was, they did just that. They finished better than 17th. And as a result, Mark Scaife, of course, is the Shell Championship Series winner for this year. So he'll get the coveted number one on his car for next season. And of course the final race for Craig Lowndes with the Holden Racing team, the announcement of course the other week that he is now definitely leaving the Holden Racing team. Of course Scaife during the week coming out saying he wants to star for a teammate, he wants somebody who is a top line name, a top line driver who can be there as a good co-driver co-competitor with the team. Of course this is the whole situation why Craig Lowndes is leaving, the fact that you know, that he doesn't believe that the influences are there in the team for a good, for two number one drivers. So, you know, as a case of a number one and a number two, we'll soon find out. But things, of course, Craig Lowndes, during the weekend, playing it very, very close to his chest place. I'd say nothing's been decided yet in terms of where he's going for next year. The basic thoughts are he wants to stay with Holden if possible. But interesting news as well during the week, the fact that Craig Lowndes had been talking to Peter Brock, and Peter Brock had advised Craig Lowndes that, hey, if you're not feeling comfortable with the way things are, get out and leave. And that's exactly what Craig Lowndes has decided to do.
Well, in fact, I received a message coming through the official channels, and I will read it to you as it's been sent to me from Craig and Natalie Lowndes. And it's, beyond all the rumours and media releases, I am trying extremely hard to be involved with Holden next year. Holden are very keen to continue our relationship, but we will know more, hopefully, the week after Bathurst. HRT are now asking for a financial sum for me to pay them to race in the Le Mans race at Adelaide. This race was never something I was getting paid for, but mainly for experience, and one of my dreams is to race in the Le Mans 24-hour race. We do not have any money, we do not have the money they're asking for to release me from my contract a few days early. Hopefully next year I will be able to be involved. I will be doing my uttermost best to help HRT win the championship at Bathurst, and I would also like to thank HRT for the past 6 years we have been involved. We had a great partnership. Although it was a very difficult decision to make, I believe it was the best decision for my family and my future. I hope you understand that it wasn't made overnight, but the negotiations had been going on for the past 5 months. Once again, we hope you enjoy watching Bathurst, my last race with HRT. That's coming to us last week from Craig Lowndes, and showing that, you know, there is no animosity between him. It was a business decision, and it's one that he didn't take lightly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's been said around, was during the rounds of the pits at Bathurst on Friday, was the fact that apparently Noble isn't very happy about the fact that HRT let Lowndes slip through their fingers. Apparently the relationship between Lowndes and Noble is very, very strong, and I would not be surprised that whatever team Craig Lowndes goes with next year, if he doesn't go to a team that's really got if he goes to a team that is like a new team, or a team that's created around him, that it very likely could have some Noble sponsorship. And of course there's lots of reading now about the fact that you know, possibly Peter Brock could become, you know, all those rumours circulating earlier this year about, you know, Peter Brock and a super team, etc., getting involved with Craig Lowndes, and who knows, it may have come true yet. So it's still very much up in the air. We'll have to wait and see where it all goes over the next few weeks, and of course it's just one of those things that no doubt there's lots of people trying to negotiate and do deals and the like, but it's all going to come down to the money and who's available. So it's going to be an interesting week, and no doubt lots of rumours flying around, and probably after today there will be even more flying around. So quite interesting where that's all going to head. The other component, of course, for this is now everybody and anybody who's after that second seat of HRT, they'll be lining up, and one of the jokes during the weekend was that the only thing longer than the autograph queue at HRT was the driver application queue. You know, they're all lining up to have a say that they were potential drivers for the team for next year, so we'll see where it all goes with that. Of course, the V8 supercars weren't the only things that weren't running up there at Bathurst at Mount Panorama. There was, of course, the Nations Cup. The final round of the Nations Cup for the GDP cars was run up there at Mount Panorama. Of course, a man who was the winner in his Porsche was Jim Richards. Jim, some trying conditions, but once again, you proved the class act up there, taking out the win in the GDP Nations Cup race today.
Yes, no, it was, you know, the conditions have been terrible ever since we arrived up there on Wednesday. It's, Richie, I think it stopped raining for about 1 hour in about a week. So, yeah, they were pretty trying, but I mean, you just got to go and do the best you can. And, like, we had three races, and we got a fourth, a fifth, and then we won the main one, so that was good.
Of course, the conditions really have been something atrocious up there for the whole week. raining from the Monday right through till today.
Yes, apparently on Monday the pit straight down at Murray's Corner had like over a metre of water flowing across it. So, you know, I think they thought at some time that they wouldn't even be able to run the event.
Mm. Of course, it's been quite atrocious in the pit areas where particularly a lot of sport properties like GDP Nations have been based, literally rivers of mud flowing through those areas, so very hard for the teams to prepare the cars as well.
Oh, look, that's the only disappointing part about it. I mean, me personally, the track is fantastic, but unless they do something with the facilities and the, you know, for the, well, not only the support categories, but even the V8s behind the garages, it's bad news. I mean, they have to do something to it, otherwise people won't want to come back.
Now, of course, you drove up there last year in the Volvo when they had terrible conditions up there, particularly with the low cloud. How did you compare the conditions this year on the track to last year?
No, virtually the same. I mean, really, it can only rain, you know, I mean, it rains hard and it rains hard. So, no, the conditions were no worse than I've seen up here before. Just that the conditions were here for longer, you know, for like 6 days instead of a couple.
Now, of course, as you say, you sort of won today's main race. The last couple of races in the previous days, you say, fifth and fourth. The competition really in that GDP Nations Cup race up there has been really a ferocious battle, particularly your people like Mark Noski, Peter Fitzgerald, all fighting to try and improve their places within the championship. So it has been a couple of days of hectic action for the guys.
It certainly has. And one of the reasons why the placings are a little bit sort of, you know, not as much, not as well as good as they'd like. I mean, naturally we would have liked to have won the three races, but being wet all the time, every single practice we had to use our wet tyres. So we had to sort of mix and match a little bit, and the tyres were getting a little bit down in the tread wise. So we saved our best tyres for the Sunday race because it was the one that was going to be seen by the most people. So, you know, there was a little bit of strategy there. So, you know, it wasn't the fact that we weren't good enough in the other races. We just chose to run a slightly different tyre, which didn't quite have the grip capabilities.
Now, of course, today, running with the cat team there was John Bowne. Of course, you had your share of dramas in that car during the day, didn't you?
No, we did. Everything was running along fantastically. I mean, we were in third place, and the car was going good, and it looked like we might finish on the podium. But for some reason, and we don't know why, it lost the wheel. John brought it back to the pits. They looked, there was no reason why it had come off. They put another one on, bolted it up, and went out again, and then the other side came off. No reason why. I mean, nothing's damaged, nothing's wrong. Well, no, I mean, they were tight, otherwise they would have come off straight away. So, bit of a mystery, actually, but anyway, we'll see what happens when the flag marshals bring our wheels back.
That's one of those things, isn't it? You can race all season long with the same wheels, the same lock nuts, the same setup on the car. You come to Bathurst, and things that never happen anywhere else happen there.
Well, that's right, and the silly part of that is that they just came off in that last stint for some funny reason, you know. It's who knows, you know.
And of course, for yourself, despite the fact that you didn't finish on the podium, at least a bit of satisfaction being a happy father seeing your son finish third today and up on the podium.
No, good. Good. No, that was great. I mean, they were having a strong position. They just probably need a bit more horsepower. I think the other cars are a little bit too quick on the straight line for them. But they'll be right next year. Greg and Steve will get organised, and you know, the team will be stirred up and get some more power from the engines and all that sort of stuff. It'll be good.
Mm. Now, Jim, is this your final race for this year? A bit of a break for you now before the start of next season?
Yes, no, this is the final race. I think the first race for us next year is not until the beginning of March. So we don't have a chance to rest, though. We've got to take the car apart and find out why it went so good and try and make it go better.
Okay, because the thing is, this is the story, isn't it? That you win the championship this year, but in the meantime between now and the first race next season, everybody's out there trying to do better to try and beat you.
Exactly right, yes. You know, you can't sort of stop and rest on your laurels, that's for sure.
Mm. Well, Jim Richards, congratulations on your win today in the GDP Nations Cup and also your victory in the championship as a whole, and our commiserations about the bad luck with the cat racing team.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim Richards.
There'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Erindale, Charnwood, Dixon, Western, Canberra Centre and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45pm. Kayleen will be open until 10pm. Convenient betting with ACTABs, sponsors of Triple S.
Want to join in a day of great racing? The Adam Innaby Jockey Club is holding their premier race day on Saturday the 25th of November, including the 1400 metre feature race, the Bolero Adam Innaby Cup. Who Enjoy the fun of a country race day with gates open at 10 a.m. There'll be food including a barbecue and smoked trout and stiff roast luncheon in the pavilion. Full bar, sideshows and rides, fashions on the field including most dapper plumber and a $1,600 treasure chest raffle. For more information call Jim Madden on 6454 2600. The Adam Innaby Jockey Club, sponsors of Triple S.
Remember the Sports Challenge quiz? Well, it's happening again.
You can be a daily winner and win breakfast at McDonald's.
Or a weekly winner and win a bottle of Grand Beauty.
Or become the grand champion and win a night's accommodation for the family at the luxurious Homebush Courtyard Apartments in Sydney.
The Sports Challenge will kick off every weekday morning at 7:15 a.m. from August the 7th. So, register your interest now and be in with a chance to win.
Just call Triple S during business hours on 6257 7777 with your name and telephone number.
Dad, where are you going?
I'm going to play golf.
Why?
Because I like to play golf.
Why?
Because I get to walk around chasing a little ball.
Why?
Usually because I hit the ball into the rough.
Why?
Because the club faces open up too much.
Why, Dad?
You know, I think I should just quit.
But why?
Well, maybe we could do something.
When?
How about now?
Family, isn't it about time? From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Triple S FM Inside Motorsport as we come back to you now. And, of course, in a week where Mitsubishi has had to explain why Tommy Mäkinen's turbochargers was declared illegal following the post-event scrutineering, it now does mean that Marcus Grönholm has taken out the championship, notwithstanding that next weekend we will hear from Greg Strange all about the cars running around the Forest of Wales for the Network Q rally. But in local rallying news, or more local than the WRC anyway, Coffs Harbour has lost the round of the New South Wales round of the Australian Rally Championship to Adelaide. So Adelaide's going to be hosting the New South Wales round. That's interesting in itself. But in a bid backed by the South Australian government, devastated officials of the Rally New South Wales, they were informed by Cairns late midweek that after 10 years of successfully running the event, Coffs Harbour would no longer hold the ARC round, with South Australia winning the round over them. Now, a clerk at the course, Bob Halpin, said Cairns had not been critical in the event in any way that had been run at Coffs Harbour, stating that the decision had been a financial one. Now, it's interesting, a financial one. Who too? It costs more to go to South Australia than it does to go to Adelaide, because most of the teams are Eastern Seaboard teams. So that is my query, not anything that was in the press release that I'm telling you about. Cairns informed Rally New South Wales that the South Australian bid had been heavily financed by the South Australian government, and as such was an attractive proposal for Cairns, Mr. Halpin said. Support from the South Australian government will see the Rally Championship go from strength to strength in 2001. The Adelaide Rally in South Australia will be a welcome return to a nationwide series of events that start in March and end in November. In an announcement, the new calendar, Peter Hansen, the CEO of Cairns, said Cairns and ARCOM, the Australian Rally Commission, were approached by the South Australian government with a proposal that was too good to refuse from a promotional aspect. The event in South Australia will set new standards for rounds of the Australian Rally Championship, with excellent driver facilities and spectator accessibility to a degree never before seen. The ARC Super Series for drivers comprising of 5 rallies, whereas the ARC Manufacturers Championship includes 2 international events, and that could be cut down to 1 with the dramas that we already know about, the Asia Pacific Rally Championship, Rally of Canberra, and the World Rally Championship, Telstra Rally Australia. But as I did say, we still are up in the air about that news. Of course, throughout the week, we have heard that our own Mark Webber will be driving for Benetton. Scafie would probably love the job, but he's not going to get it. And he'll be taking the major role in the what will be the new French team, of course.
The important part of this is that Mark will be doing the lion's share of the engine development testing for Renault for that Formula One program. And the other part of the deal, which was the real clincher for him, was the fact that it did involve a Formula 3000 drive during the year to keep him sort of in tune and sort of things. And it is with one of the top level teams. So things looking very, very good there for Mark Webber. He's worked long and hard for it, and great the opportunity is there for him to, as I say, move to the top of the pile in Formula One. And of course, the name of the game, as we've seen in the past, if one of the drivers coming in is ill, doesn't perform, well, then the test driver is the guy who normally is out of full chance. I suppose he'd be walking around hoping to, you know, spike the pastor or something for Jensen Button or Fisichella or something. Sort of, no, we're kind of joking there, but that's the type of thing that could very likely happen.
Yeah, it could indeed. And this is a story I know you're going to be quite interested in. Ford could be, Ford's trio could be battling it in Germany next year. Whilst Ricard Riedel is testing for Mercedes at Hockenheim, Alain Menu and Anthony Reid are linked to a ProDrive run Opel team, which of course the Ford BTCC stars could be on the verge of a mass exodus to DTM next year. Ricard Riedel tested the Mercedes CLK at Hockenheim on Wednesday and Thursday, following on from Dutch test driver Tom, is that Cornell?
Coronel.
Coronel, who suffered an accident during his test on Monday. Motorbike racing star Ralph Waldemann also drove a Mercedes at the same venue on Friday. Riedel's options for next year are to remain in the BTCC, most likely with Peugeot, or to take a year out to develop Volvo's 2002 touring car for the European series, but the test must surely give him a shout at a seat in the DTM Merck factory. The Swede was unable to comment about the DTM test, but said, "I haven't signed any deals with anyone yet, and I've not decided where I'll be racing next year. I'm still talking to a number of manufacturers." Now, a Mercedes spokesman has said that these are all drivers we will test for the time being, but it is possible we may test more. Now, Formula 3000 racer Christian Albers has been expected to test but didn't get a drive this week, and he is likely to be given a run in the future, however. But the rumours linking ProDrive with Opel's DTM attack intensified during the week, with the possibility of both Anthony Reid and Alain Menu joining those ranks. The Russellheim mark is keen to up its game in 2001, and it's an all-out effort to beat Mercedes, and the Bainbury outfit, along with its star drivers, would fit the bill. Another rumour is that German Manatee squad is expected to be one of the first privateer entries with a pair of CLK Mercedes, and they declined to comment when that matter was raised with them. Now, that report from British Autosport.
And the interesting thing is that with Ricard Riedel is that he is basically signed for next year to do a test driving role with Volvo. So what he's looking for is a 1 year deal where he can stay competitive, stay on the track. Effectively, Volvo is preparing a new car to enter the European Touring Car Championship in 2002. And very likely that car will also make an appearance in the British Touring Car Championship. So either way, he's got an option there. The interesting part of it is that the way things are heading, that it appears that there will probably be quite a number of manufacturers and so on who'll be sort of sitting back, seeing what happens with the British Touring Car Championship in the first year. As we already know, Vauxhall have announced they're in, Peugeot have announced they're in. They're still waiting for the confirmation of the NG badged Rovers. Apparently, BMW is starting to look very carefully at the new rules, the way that they're likely to be picked up by both the British Touring Car Championship and the European Touring Car Championship from 2002. One of the people I was speaking to at Bathurst on Friday was, of course, Matt Neal. Now, Matt, as people know, is one of the top privateers, or not the top privateer, from the British Touring Car Championship. His Nissan Primera Super Tourer, basically next year, not an option to run that car, so he's got to find himself a new car. He's got to run in the, what they call the production car class, or the outright class. So he's currently trying to do a couple of deals, and he reckons he's close, but he has to wait and see where things end up, but no doubt he's going to stop a couple of deals on the go. He was actually also looking at running in the European Sprint Car Championship next year, which does run to the Super Touring rules, and he said that just the thing there was just the cost to run around all the various circuits in Europe in terms of transport and accommodation and so on, and unless you've got a fairly large sponsorship package and a bit of manufacturer support, it doesn't particularly work that well. But it's something, he said, it's a very good championship, but at this point in time, unless something happens, he'll probably just stick with the British Touring Car Championship, try and do a deal there. Interesting enough as well, another British Touring Car Championship driver is considering, if he can't get a drive with the DTM, who's also looking for a drive elsewhere, is Anthony Reid, and he has put his option as being, if he can't get a DTM drive, if he can't get a British Touring Car Championship drive that's suitable, he's got the feelers out via his teammate Alain Menu for a drive down here in Australia.
Well, he certainly could do a lot worse, but one other interesting thing coming out this week was that Craig Pollock, of course the boss of Barr, reckons Oliver Panis is as good as the Frenchman's former teammate at McLaren. The ex-world champion, Mika Häkkinen, and nine-time Grand Prix winner, David Coulthard, both this week, and it seems that, Craig Pollock thinks that Panis has shown he is a match for CC and Häkkinen. Now, that's coming in the same week as Jenson Button came out and lambasted Sir Frank Williams about letting him go, and Sir Frank Williams said he's not losing any sleep this week or in the future about the decision to let the youngster, the young Brit, go for Juan Pablo Montoya, as he has been immensely impressed by Montoya throughout the year. Now, picking up a test drive, along with, of course, our own Mark Webber, was the Indian Formula 3 driver, Nairn Kathikaran. Kathikaran, I think is the pronunciation. He secured pole position at Macau and the quickest lap ever seen at the circuit, and has been very impressive, along with racing mates, I guess you call it, Bruno Junqueri and Nicholas Marcassi, who have all taken their first chance to run a champ car at a test at Nazareth this weekend. So a fairly busy testing period going on in the United States for a lot of those drivers. And, of course, Mark Webber is going to be most likely running with the Supernova team, who have won the championship, I think, the last 2 years running. So.
The other interesting part, excuse me, in all this is Peter Sauber, of course, made his announcement. He was having, looking for Finnish rookie Kimi Räikkönen to be his choice of second driver 2001. But already the indications are from the FIA that what Räikkönen has done to date in terms of his competition exploits, he's not good enough to get an FIA super license, and therefore the talk is that because they're trying to tighten up, you know, just how people do get super licenses, so it looks like Sauber may have to go looking elsewhere for his number two driver for that team. The other part is that as well, James Courtney during last week had his run with the Stewart Formula 3 team and apparently impressed the team there, despite the fact that it was fairly miserable weather during his test, and hopefully things will work out well there for James Courtney, because if he does what he did this year in Formula Ford, I'd say that he could prove to be the next big thing for Australia in terms of heading towards Formula 1 behind Mark Webber. Wouldn't it be delightful, you know, if Mark Webber got there and a couple of years later down the track we have James Courtney with Jaguar? That would be, I think, possibly brilliant. So these are things we've got to look forward to. So we've got all sorts of things there. Hopefully we've now got Peter Norton back on the line. All the things going there. And Peter, wet and miserable down there at Bathurst, but no doubt a great race, but not the result you were after as a loyal Blue Oval man.
That's right. It was a very exciting race, quite an exciting finish there. There was one lap in particular that Paul Radicic gained a couple of seconds on Garth Pander. The Ford fans, they really picked up, really getting ready for a nail-biting finish, but unfortunately that was just Garth Pander playing with a brake bias and a few things like that. He actually had the race well under control, and in the end sort of cruises to a 5 or 6 second victory, and it was really well done. He did a double stint there to finish the race, and as you can imagine, with all the tension and the excitement at the end, all of the top couple of drivers were really drained. They were pretty happy to get to the end.
Well, we were able to hear from Paul Radicic during the press conference that you fed down the line to us, but what was the feeling? Because Gargano's not the he's not the most introverted person you'd ever meet.
That's right. I thought he was going to jump from the balcony to the presentation, so he stood up there. But I think that was just so he could look dark in the eyes with the height difference. Yes, he's over the moon. There was yeah babies and things like that, fist in the air. It's great to see them so happy about their victory. Of course, they worked very hard for it. In particular, this race, such a lottery. So much relying on team tactics and a little bit of luck through the traffic other things putting people out. It's a good prize for a hard day's work.
One of the surprise packages early on, of course, in terms of the top 10 qualifying in the early part of the race today was Wayne Gardner, the second of the four ticket racing Falcons, who was actually putting in some quite blistering lap times and brilliant performances in the whip. But the thing that I suppose I should have figured out was that looking back on Wayne's races, he's been running the Japanese GT Championship this year, which run cars with about 800 horsepower, ABS and things like that. A lot of them have been wet races, so he probably came here with form for wet races.
Yeah, that's right. He pointed out that in Japan he is known as the Wayne Master, a bit of a play on words from the Japanese accent there, of course. Yes, he's had a very busy year, and it's quite a successful year over there. A lot of wet races, a lot of horsepower. So the Australian V8 series is, he wasn't particularly stretching himself. And he brought to the Four Tipton Racing Team just that extra little urgency and professionalism in pit stops and things like that. He pushed them that little bit harder. He wasn't going to allow them to sort of live up to the reputation that the second car was a second car in his mind, and he made everyone else around him realise that that number six car was an equal number one. And of course that was reflected in the pole position and the many laps led. Very disappointing there, particularly for Canberra's Neil Bates, that it all came to nothing in the end. During the pit stop when Wayne Gardner brought it in, the viewers on the TV might have noticed that the car stalled as they were taking off. That's because the clutch was already gone. So Neil sort of went out there to do a couple of laps, knowing full well that the days were numbered. And of course then when he tangled with a back marker that put him into a bit of the grass, getting bogged, I understand, but something I actually missed. It was already game over. That was just rubbing salt into the wound. I think, Neil, you guys might be able to catch him on his mobile. I haven't caught him here today. I'm sure he's disappointed, but then again, it was pretty exciting. Fantastic ride along there on the top team. And let's hope that Four Tipton Racing invite him back again next year, and maybe that can do a little bit better.
Mm. Yeah, of course, the other four team, of course, which was Dick Johnson Racing, they did very, very well there with the second place. I think they also had their second car finishing fourth. The rest of the field, like you had Tane Longhurst, his car sort of had problems, you know, was doing quite well, then had problems near the end. Stephen Early had a few problems. It seemed that the Fords were generally, if you look at the top 20, were quite strong during the day, but when it came down to that final bit of the day, it was the Commodores who came through.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking, of course, for the Royal Ford fans, that showing so much form and promise, and then funny little things put them out, including some of our friends from across the seas putting out one of my favourites, of course, indirectly after knocking him into a spin. What can you say about the Ford? At least they're showing the speed and the promise these days. You don't have to go too far, too many years back, and they were just nowhere to be seen. And maybe it's part of the Ford factory philosophy. They don't necessarily have a number one Ford factory team as Holden does with the HRT. I understand that they share some of their development across the teams. I think that's part of the reason you see such a depth and quality across the Ford ranks. They would just need that extra little boost to get them across the line first rather than second 2 years in a row.
Mm. And of course, one of the things today is that the conditions, as we're seeing, were pretty atrocious there, that the rain was fairly consistent. There's only a few moments where they did get dry sessions, but realistically, if we look at since they arrived there, the teams and the cars last Monday, right through the day, they had nothing but rain, and more rain.
Has anyone seen anything like it, that it's rained here 9 or 10 days straight? That's just remarkable for anywhere. And it's funny, as people go towards Bathurst, they say it's not an endurance race, it's just a 1,000-kilometre sprint race. And year in, year out, it's proven that it really is an endurance race. It's survival of the fittest, including a bit of luck in there as well. Just running down the top 10, some of the stories that are out and about, of course, Garth Panda and Jason Barbuana, very happy there to win the race. I think that it hasn't really sunk into them yet, of course, about what it means to win, but you get the sense that they're happy to win the race, and coming second in the championship is not so important. Mark Scaife, on the other hand, is saying the exact opposite, that the championship is more important to him. He's very proud of his efforts, and Bathurst is just a one-day race. Yeah, do you expect him to say anything else?
Yeah, that's right. That's Scaife doing the party line.
Scaife's very good at that. Just before the press conference, he was asked about the backmarkers and the traffic, and he very politely said they were very good. He didn't have any major problems out there. Yes, stark contrast to Russell Ingall's comments earlier in the week, and it also contradicted a little bit some of the comments from the other drivers, although they weren't particularly scathing. They just said, okay, one lap you get caught up behind someone, the next lap it's your newest competitor that gets caught up behind them. It sort of balances out. It's really only if you come to contact with them that it may be more of a problem.
Actually, it's interesting to see in terms of discussions the Bathurst Ford engine. Alan Moffat was saying, well, the guys have got to consider themselves that the fact that they're running one class of car compared to previous years where they used to run a number of classes of cars, where they had like a 3-litre class and a 2-litre class and a 1.6-litre class, where you had Mazdas, Toyotas, Datsuns, as we call them, etc., who were all having their own battles, and your speed differential could be, 60 miles per hour, as he's talking in his language, from someone he was racing, difference compared to these guys where the differential normally is not that great. He said, what are they talking about? Yeah, that's all what they're used to.
Well, that's right. It's really no different to before. And instead of engine capacity classes, really it's budget classes. Some of the guys at the back, they're doing it tough. They're doing it with the money they've got. And of course they're going to be slower. There were a few liabilities out there, of course. Some cars that are standing particularly ill, and that was in the first half of the day, and they're still going around at the end of the day at 10 or more seconds a lap slower. I think there's a margin for all, but sometimes you really do have to take enough guys. The debate will go on. The debate will be there every year.
Mm.
Garth Panda, who was sitting a little funny in the media conference, he pointed out that the heat of the car underneath the seat, he's basically burnt his backside. He was hoping to be relieved from that car for the final stint, but Gary Rogers' team said, no, you can stay in there. He basically did what was required. Paul Radicic was another one who was feeling rather drained at the end, sort of going into cramps and that before he went up to spray the champagne. It's really quite demanding and physical out there. Maybe cool and wet outside, but it's still hot, hard work inside the cars. Steve Richards and Greg Murphy, they were quite happy with the way they placed there, particularly passing the Stephen Johnson, Cameron McLean car there towards the end to secure that third place. The car that was overheating quite badly for the last many, many laps, maybe 30 or 40 laps there, overheating all the time, the in-car alarm that monitors the engine temperatures going off 4 or 5 times a lap, and they're just resetting it and just ignoring it and trying to put it outside their mind. They had to battle on regardless, and it paid off for them. Steve Johnson and Cameron McLean, Steve Johnson Racing put together pretty good cars, don't they? How many years do they finish? Their finishing record's pretty good. That's probably almost comparable to the Larry Perkins sort of finishing record.
Just jump in there, the fact that Cameron McLean's efforts in that car, in particular the middle stint where he was in there, the car actually sort of got near the very front end of the field there. He, I think, surprised a few people with the pace he was getting out of that car, and in fact he actually does have the driver skill there.
That's right, but some of these guys who star at Bathurst each year, they're not the fastest or most consistent during the championship series. They often seem to be on the wrong side of the luck equation. Perhaps Stephen Johnson hasn't set the world on fire in the championship, but it's come back this each year, he puts in a good showing, and the same for Karen McLean. They had a very good effort there. Mark Scaife, battled to the final part of the race, of course, with that contact where took Glenn Seaton's car out of the running. He also said that he had a sticking throttle, which made driving quite interesting, going into some corners. He basically had to pop the clutch and let the engine rev, trying to control the car. So I think that due credit needs to go there for Mark Scaife, who just sort of battled on for the championship, of course. It's something that's pretty dangerous. Took a lot of skill there to keep that on the black stuff rather than out of the brown mud and slop. Of course, very disappointing in the Glenn Seaton camp. Colin, I'd love to hear your perspective on that little incident, because Matt Neal being one of your contacts, what's your read on that little incident?
I think it's one of those stories too. The fact of the car that Matt's used to is a lot lighter and stops on a dime. I suppose that he's used to, from the British Touring Car Championship, of doing that type of overtaking move, and it's just something they're not used to in Australia. As it was, he was the guy who got hit in the rear. He didn't hit the other guys in the rear.
Yeah, haven't spoken to Glenn Seaton, but Mark Scaife was pretty full of the move. And you're right, maybe it is down to the different racing style. I guess the leaders here at Bathurst expect that the backmarkers who are being light move aside somewhat, and what's the point in fighting back? But of course, everyone's in running their own race, and they're trying to do their best. That's something there's plenty of debate about.
Mm. Well, there's always some controversy. Interesting enough, the Holden Young Lions team car, they finished fifth with Todd Kelly and Nathan Petty. A good result for them.
Yes. Had a few drivers along the way, but generally did a fantastic job. They'll be very happy with that. That's a good place there.
Mm. And, of course, Baird and Wills, of course, finishing inside the top ten.
Yes, a team that was very quiet in the lead-up. I guess some people were, again, basing the Bathurst form on the championship form. Craig Baird has had a pretty average year. And, just if you can stay out of trouble as much as possible and keep on circulating, it's amazing what can happen, in particular because of the number of safety car periods. That keeps everyone on the same lap. And it's quite remarkable the type of dramas that some teams had. You just look at Mark Scaife, for example, and he still finishes on the lead lap. And at the end, Paul Radicich was praying for a safety car, trying to bunch them up for five or six lap sprint to the finish. Mm. Unfortunately, he wasn't safe.
Yeah. But of course, the thing is now is that this was Craig Lowndes' last run with the Holden Racing Team, and now, of course, he sets off, tries to do his deal between now and the end of the year for whoever he'll run with next season.
There was a period there when Craig Lowndes was absolutely ringing at the car's neck, and as I was watching it, I was thinking, Lowndes is there to win the race. He doesn't care so much about the championship. Made some daring moves. But still under control. He's pretty talented. And we're quite anxious to find out where he ends up next year.
Mm. And the other interesting part of it, of course, is that given the number of incidents during the day, quite a few people...
I missed you there.
Number of incidents during the day, just a number of people now going away with some severely damaged cars, people like the Gatorade, Commodore and so on, that'll have to be repaired before the start of next season.
A lot of work to do. Just reading down the results list here, 29 cars were classified as finishers. It was 57 that started. A lot of sore and sorry cars out there, but that's about it. That's what the fans actually come to see. They come to see the drama and the excitement. The crowd numbers, I haven't seen them, but there are some releases floating around. The bit of Escort pretty proud of the crowd numbers, even though it's wet and miserable and the conditions here are pretty ordinary.
Yeah, they're saying that the crowd was somewhere in the range of 40,000 people. Given that the conditions and how bad they were, I suppose they'd have to be pretty happy with that. That's 40,000.
It's good to see that the fans still come out, and maybe it's part of selling the tickets in advance. Once you've paid, you're going to go regardless. What's going to be interesting, of course, is getting out of this place. We all watched with quite a bit of laughter seeing the cars spinning through the mud and getting bogged just off the racetrack. You can just bet that that's going to repeat itself 20,000 times in the car park if everyone tries to get from the car park out to the bitumen road.
For someone who's got a good four-wheel drive or a tractor, they can probably earn some very good money towing a lot of bogged cars out of cover, because I know it was bad enough on Friday. I can imagine what it's like now after a couple more days of all the cars coming in and out and churning it up?
Quite frankly, it's disgraceful. As I was driving in this morning, I was hoping to catch on the radio some arrangement where they say, look, park in Bathurst and we'll run a shuttle bus into the track. I didn't hear anything about that. Maybe they did. I didn't hear of it. You have to be quite proactive in these things. There's going to be a lot of talk about how miserable the conditions are at Bathurst, in the paddock, for some of the support categories. They're just terrible conditions. And if just go walking away from tracks that have ordinary facilities, they're going to walk away from this one. If I was a circuit promoter from one of these small tracks that as a victim of some of these policies, I'd be writing a few letters in that. It's also quite interesting that one of the ministers for tourism were here, and Tony Cochrane, of course, is after some quite hefty government funding to upgrade facilities, build a whole new pit facility on the outside of the track, down at just across the road from where the current facilities are. It's quite interesting that Tony Cochrane will now be trying to use a bit of leverage on the government to get those facilities. He points out the number of fans that outrank rugby league in New South Wales. Have that little fair share of the funding. That'll be an interesting one to watch. The facilities really are needed.
Yeah. Well, actually, they had the federal sports minister there today, and Tony Cochrane was taking his opportunity during the telecast to state his case. He wants $15 million from the federal government to go towards...
Petty cash, isn't it? Yeah, sure. That's really a victim of the Bathurst Board, isn't it? There's all these facilities that are owned by Channel 7 and the Australian Racing Drivers Club. If it wasn't for the Bathurst Board, these facilities would be better developed. That's water under the bridge. We have to move ahead now, but we have to work out something where they can develop this Australia's leading facility in terms of history and prestige, at least. They have to develop this going forward somehow. The Bathurst City Council, of course, is the one common link there, and they'll try to work something out. It really was miserable for some of the support categories. I was doing the rounds of some of the paddocks, and you've got your Ferraris and the Porsches and stuff going through, almost knee-deep slop to get to the circuit. It really was an advantage for some of the four-wheel drive cars just to get to the circuit.
I think probably the only person who was making money down in Bathurst was the guy who had the supply of Wellington boots.
Yeah, that's right. Wood chips and things like that that they try to put down, trying to soak up some of the slop where the pedestrian traffic is. I know one friend who was advised that she was driving up yesterday. She stopped en route to buy some gum boots. It was a wise investment, that's for sure.
Well, Peter Norton, what we might do is we'll just probably come back to you a little bit later on if possible. I know Craig's got a couple of other things we've got to cover this evening, and thanks very much for your report on Bathurst so far.
Yeah, no worries. It's funny, the lead-up is so miserable with the water and all the slop and all of the hassle, but even with all of that, it's an exciting race. It's good to be here, even if the bad guys win.
You can tell this man is a Ford fan, can't he? He calls them the bad guys. And I tell you, I can almost imagine you picturing Jason Barguana and Garth Tander wearing the black hats.
Yes, that's right. And he throws darts at anyone who drives Holden's. But on a different topic, certainly when we're talking history of Bathurst, there is one place where the history of Australian motor racing was more often written than not. And that was the Speedway Royal, the Sydney Showdown Speedway. Of course, time has moved on and it's now become the ailing backlot tour of the Fox Studio Empire. Perhaps it is a tax deduction for Mr. Murdoch. Who would know? He certainly would probably need a few tax deductions, the amount of money he earns. But Bill Lawler joins us on the line now, of course, from the New South Wales Vintage and Veteran Speedcar Association. And Bill, a very important unveiling happened today, and it looked like the clouds did part for what was a very special occasion.
Okay, unlike Bathurst, g'day, how are you? Unlike Bathurst, we were blessed with a perfect day. Not a drop of water fell on the Sydney Showground, so it must have been meant to happen. We had a fabulous turnout of cars, bikes, especially the solos and sidecars. The Bertie Vincent was on display, and we ended up with a roll-up of somewhere between 16 and 20 cars.
It was
a very special day in as much as it was an unveiling of a memorial to all the drivers and riders who had lost their life whilst the Speedway Royal was running. In, I think, starting in 1938, the Royal started racing right through to 1996.
Yeah, 1926, Craig.
Oh, I didn't claim to know anything about this sort of thing.
Oh, I got to know these things. They tell me I'm a historian on it. But it's it ran from 1926 till its closure in 1996, so it was 70 consecutive years broken only by the war. So, you know, it's got a tremendous amount of history there. And yes, it was a bit of a sad day. We had the unveiling of the 25 competitors that were killed over those 70 years who lost their lives either riding a solo or a passenger on a sidecar or be in a speed car. It was a bit moving in some instances where some of the family turned up for the unveiling, and but not only that, it was a bit sad, but there were some great times to be had there. There was a lot of the competitors there that raced there. Billy Shovel was one that nearly lost his life in a midget, but he was there today with his original car builder, Ronnie Ward. He brought his car along. We had Offenhauser's, we had the Bill Wells cars, and even the Dark family, Ted Dark and his son Edward, brought along the car that Gary Rush won the very last feature race at the Sydney Showgreen in 1996. So it was a great day, actually, even though it was a bit sad.
It also does seem that Fox Studios and the Fox management did go a long way towards remembering the roots of the showground, and this memorial tribute to those years, the 70 years that you mentioned, that were dominated by Friday, and then down at the sports ground on Saturday night, where motor racing was so prevalent and was the major entertainment source right throughout the summer for Sydneysiders.
Well, it sure was, Craig, and I guess even though Murdoch's taken now a major track away from us, probably one of the grandest speedways in the world, we've got to thank Fox Studios for the support they gave us today. They just bent over backwards to help us in any way we needed to publication. We've just had the 30 seconds on the Channel 10 news covering our day down there, so that was great.
Oh, it was about 2 minutes on the Canberra broadcast.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, geez, we'll have to move down there. That's great. We had about 30 seconds up here, and it may have been pretty close to 2 minutes, but it just seemed so quick, considering it's an hour news. And we get a bit of coverage in The Australian tomorrow morning, so that's something. But there were some good things that we thought about when we were down there today, or even the extent of your grandfather being the winningest driver, Ray Revell, and your dad was, you know, he was pretty near undefeated in those 100-lap marathons down there, so it was good times. We chewed over the fat down there and ran about a million laps during the day, and it was great.
Yeah, it was a special day, and I know a lot of people did enjoy the opportunity to get out there just in speaking to a few people that I have done throughout the course of this weekend. And, of course, the Vintage and Veteran Speed Car Association do more than just have static displays, and, of course, Sid Middlemiss can still be seen running around there wide open at many of the more exciting displays that you put on at various locations around the state.
Yeah, we do get a bit excited when we strap ourselves into these old race cars, but they're a lot of fun, and we know the dangers, so we tread very carefully with them. We put on the best demonstration we can. Obviously, we can't race them anymore because they were so dangerous in those old days, and times don't change. The cars are exactly the way they were back then. So we've got to be very careful. But yes, we do some fantastic demonstration runs. Just recently we did a demonstration run around the wide open spaces of the Wagga Showground for their 125th anniversary show. So we probably have about 25 or 30 cars that could come out tomorrow and be started up. In our club now, we're up to 100 vintage cars at some stage of restoration. So our club's looking very strong and good for the future.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to your next opportunity to visit us down here. Of course, the ACT Vintage Association now having their own facility, which does make for a bit easier time to get on the track.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We've got sort of a subsidiary club down there with a couple of guys that belong to the Vintage Speed Car Association up here in Sydney, and they've managed to get the Fairburn track going again, and looks like we might be able to put on some a few shows down there, and thanks to the boys down there, it's been great. You know, it's another place where we can demonstrate our cars and put on a good show for the public.
Well, Bill, a very special day, as we said, the unveiling today at Fox Studios for the drivers. And what was the reaction of the people who are perhaps going to Fox Studios for other more enlightening entertainment?
Well, you know, it's it was very quiet down there. I think the weather had a lot to do with it, Craig. It was very, very overcast, and I was wondering what I was doing on my way down there. As I went past Mascot Airport, it was absolutely teeming at 8 o'clock this morning, but you wouldn't believe there wasn't a single drop of rain fell on the arena while we were there all day. As a matter of fact, it became very muggy. And but we were pretty fortunate. There was a fair crowd that came through, and many of the old-time competitors and officials. Mike Raymond turned up to have a look in. He did a lot for Speedway in those early years of the 60s, promoting promoting us very strongly in the media. The chief steward from the early days, Jack Matthews, he turned up with his wife, and you know, we saw a lot of great people from those early days come through. So it was a good roll-up.
I don't suppose a very young football player who became known as the voice of the Speedway Royal through the 60s and 70s had an opportunity to call in, of course, that being Rex Mossop.
I didn't see him. He called in, did he?
I believed he was going to be making a visit, because...
Yeah, we got tied up with a lot of people, you know, from the past, but gee, that would have been great. I really didn't see him down there.
All right.
But as I say, at some stage of the game, there was probably a couple of hundred people going through at a time, so there was a good possibility I missed him.
All right.
Now, that's a shame.
Well, Bill, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again, and for the Vintage Speedcar Association, when's your next official function?
I think it's down at Fairburn in the fourth. We've got an annual picnic day over at Silverwater in a fortnight's time.
All right, then. Well, for people who do want to have a look at the history of Australian motorsport, and particularly the history of Australian Speedway, it's all written in the in the restoration of the fine cars throughout the years 74 years that speed cars have been running in this country.
That's right, yes.
So, a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thank you, Craig, and thanks to all your listeners, and I hope they get enjoyment out of my reports, because we just love the sport.
Yes, and that can be told. Everyone involved in the Vintage and Veteran Association really do enjoy looking back at those years, and we thank Bill Lawler for his time.
There'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Arendelle, Charnwood, Dixon, Western, Canberra Centre, and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45 p.m. Kayleen will be open until 10 p.m. Convenient betting with ACTABs, sponsors of Triple S.
To be a successful share trader, you must be armed with knowledge, up-to-date information, and skills. Hi, I'm Daniel Kircher, and I'd like to introduce you to Shares Made Easy. Shares Made Easy is a fabulous interactive home learning pack, complete with a 2.5-hour video, a comprehensive manual, and special software that makes learning about share trading and investing both easy to understand and easy to do, all from the comfort of your own home and at your own pace. Shares Made Easy helps you learn how to minimize the risk, maximize the gains, and confidently trade so that profits can become a reality, not just a dream. If you're a new share investor or just want to know how to become a better one, Shares Made Easy is a wealth of information for only $195 delivered to your door.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Ollie is an irrepressible 5-year-old triplet. What sets her apart is that she's blind,
but that's never held her back. With the help of guide dog instructors, she's learned to touch, to feel, and to listen. By the time she was three, she could walk using a cane. You can help train other blind and vision impaired children by sending your donation today to the Guide Dogs, PO Box 107, Milsons Point, Sydney.
My son came home from school recently, quite upset. He's only in grade two, but he heard an older kid in the playground say something about a will. Well, actually, he asked the question, what's a will? You know what one of them said? It's when your parents die. Well, what do you say to that? Yes, it is. No, it's not. I mean, how do you explain to a kid about death? And more to the point, how do you explain that parents, like all people, die? And that some parents forget to make a will and don't get to have their say on exactly who gets what and who takes care of the kids and all that sort of stuff. It's a tough thing to tell a child. But, you know, I did my best, and I reassured him that his mum and me did have a will. We got one of those Australian legal will kits that you order over the phone. Well, they're only $29.95 plus postage and handling.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now,
1-800-246-868. Sponsored by Furby, FAI 1000, who joins us now on the line. Darth Panda, victory, you did everything possible to try and win the championship, but I guess you'll take the 1000 victory on the mountain.
Well, that's it. If you can't win the championship, you get to try and win Bathurst, and we pulled it off today, and it's an unbelievable feeling. I mean, everything was so smooth. Everything went to plan. The guys did a great job with the stop, and it's just unbelievable.
The Gary Rogers Motorsport team are a quite tight-knit little team. Gary's worked long and hard bringing the team on, and of course the drivers like Barbs and yourself. It must be really like a big family celebration there this evening.
Oh, it is, and we've all just got together now, and all the sponsors and all the crew and all the boys, we're just sitting down having a quiet beer. I don't think it's all sunk in yet, and I mean, we've obviously worked extremely hard all year, and it's just as much their race win as it is mine.
And of course, your co-driver in the car, Jason Barguana, in terms of the long and the short of it, as they say, it's probably one of the most interesting driver pairings we've seen up on the mountain for some time.
There's a bit of a difference in our height, but Doug and I are so close with our lap times, it's not funny, and the car setup, we love the car setup exactly the same. I mean, Doug drives it how I like it, and I like it how Doug sets it up, so we're a perfect combination other than our height, and we've proven this year that, that's no obstacle, and we've just got on with the job and proven that this team is capable of winning the biggest race in Australia.
Mm. Now, of course, one of the things today was the ever-changing conditions, in terms of the rain pouring down, drizzling down, a bit of sunlight, a bit of a dry line, then back to rain again. Just how hard was it keeping attuned to what the track was doing?
It was hard because it was raining so much, and then it would dry out, and then it would rain again, and the guys made some awesome calls, really. I questioned them myself when I was driving, but they just told me to get in and we're changing tyres, and they were on the money with every call, and that's what won it for us.
Do you think the experience of the Canberra race, the GMC 400, with the pit stop strategies in the ever-changing weather, helped with this race this weekend?
It's just the Canberra race is completely different, and we're allowed to pit on the pace car here and all sorts of wonderful things, so I mean, the races are so different, and you got to apply, the best strategy that you think is going to work for your fuel consumption, your tyre life and everything else, and we did that better than everyone else today.
Do you think Gary's NASCAR experience has really come into the fore in a traditional long endurance race?
Yeah, I think so, because there's a couple of guys that are still left over from the NASCAR days that are still in the team, and they are very good at calling the shots. I mean, we go very well at Adelaide every year, and that's a very tactical race, and they know what it's all about and how it works, and I think some of that comes from their NASCAR beginnings.
Now, where to for yourself and Bargs? A bit of a break before you have to build 2001 units?
Well, I mean, the guys have almost finished one of the 2001 cars, and the other one's not far away, so, I mean, we're going to have a break over Christmas. All the guys are going to have a break, we're going to be pretty busy for the next couple of weeks now, and hopefully over Christmas time I'm going to be going home back to Perth and I think Bugs is coming up to Sydney to, you know, to get away from it all. So, you know, a bit of quiet time is going to be great.
Well, congratulations on a fantastic run today. You certainly stuck it to them, and we wish you all the best for a very happy Christmas and New Year.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks a lot.
Of course, it was just a fantastic victory, and both those drivers do really show their emotions. Even though Garth does seem to be fairly quiet, you know what he's thinking when you look at him.
I think it's going to be interesting to see if they have any of that usual thing that they have the morning after, that the team with the winning car rolls up to Bathurst, and they do their, you know, sort of photo shoot of the winning team car, you know, at the finish line, check if they got something from one. I remember the one back in 1996 with Lowndes and Murphy, and there was these two extremely hungover young guys sort of saying, don't make any noises. I reckon it might be something similar to that tomorrow if they're going to do any photography for the Gary Rogers Motorsport team and their Vardalene and Cummings sponsors. Just going on some other news from around the world, the Macau Gear street race and bike race is on this weekend. Unfortunately, news we received is that a tourist was killed in Macau, a pedestrian, which is sort of makes it sound a bit strange. And 3 hours were injured when a car crashed during the warm-up for the Gear race in Macau, which is on today. In some Formula One news, the future of Minardi, that's been a bit in doubt, and apparently the word is that will be resolved in the next few days. Apparently Minardi was hoping to try and set up an engine deal, and that has fallen through, and now they're trying to go for another deal. Of course, Bernie Eccleston, the great power broker of Formula One, is stepping in to handle part of that deal.
I was wondering what happened to Fon Metal, because Fon Metal was supposed to be taken out of the team midway through the year, and that never seemed to eventuate.
I think it's our story of economics and money. The other thing, of course, is all about drive attraction, the traction control coming back in, which should be interesting if that happens. Jaguar Racing, they've been given the approval for a new headquarters at Silverstone, so that's going to be quite handy for them. They'll include a large scale wind tunnel, etc. Spanish driver, 5000 driver Fernando Alonso, has admitted that Ferrari is one of several Formula teams that are showing interest in him, which is good to hear. And ex-Formula 1 driver Eric Kerner is actually planning to make his future in world rallying. Now, remembering how he used to drive in Formula 1 and often used to go looking for the same thing, I think he'd probably be fairly good for a world rally car driver.
Well, one man who does enjoy the rallying is digging his way out of the Bathurst quagmire. And Peter, I guess irony is a great thing, and you've got one for us now.
Yep, like you said though, the rally interest really did come in handy. We got out of the car park quite easily, really. It was carrying a bit of momentum through the turn, a bit of opposite lock, and we got out without having a dig or shovel or anything. We did see, however, a four-wheel drive fogged up to its axles, and I think that was one of the enterprising chaps who were there to pay or to charge people to pump them out. He got into even more trouble in self-drive. And, yes, the irony is just fantastic, isn't it? We're now starting to make our way home, and we've got the sun in our eyes. It's really quite annoying. Yeah, the sky is blue, the sun is out. Almost perfect timing there for the end of the race.
Now, I suppose it's a little bit different than me last year when I was there for the 500-kilometre race for Super Tours, where that cloud came down. The following morning, the cloud was still there. We couldn't even go for a drive around the top of the mountain because they had the road closed for safety grounds because of the fact you couldn't see in front of you. So at least they were able to finish the race despite the number of safety cars. Now, of course, the thing is that you've now got the run back to Canberra, and, of course, we were sort of discussing this on Friday about the fact that Mr Howard, our good Prime Minister, has been saying he wants to spend the money on fixing country roads, and having seen the condition of some of the country roads, particularly the Great Western Highway, as they call it, I call it the Great Western Pothole, between Cowra and Bathurst, I think we've got a good reason for them to spend some money on country roads.
Yes, that's right. I'm keeping the rally skills quite at hand here because the potholes are just humongous. I'm sure there's a couple of Korean cars in the bottom of some of them. They just didn't come out the other side. Yeah, the road is disgraceful. Part of it is all the rain we've had lately, but, you know, it was pretty bad to start with even before the rain. So I think that the money is, you know, well needed. Is it more farrowing? I mean, perhaps there is a National Party angle to it, but these roads really do need the funding, so I think that's a good decision.
Mm. One man who thought the potholes weren't as bad on the racetrack as perhaps the speed humps, was, of course, Russell Engle, and I know yourself and Colin both enjoyed a few words from him during the press conference.
Yeah, old Russell Engle, he certainly said a few things about some of the slower drivers, and this is what he had to say during the press conference about those slow drivers.
I did one lap actually. I got one tire right at the end, and at the tire lap it started to rain, so I wish I could have done a bit more. I hope it would be driving more. But you can't sit well on Sunday then because it was raining snow all the time. Ah, okay, but then you can ask.
Dylan, so you'd like to ask some questions? There is a problem being passed around and we'll wait.
Get in first today, and I don't think anyone voluntarily sat out of the race either, Peter.
Yeah, that's right. Because of the bizarre circumstances for all of the qualifying, you know, being rain every day and plenty of it, they didn't impose the qualifying cut-off. And, yeah, Russell Engle's comments are all very amusing, but it really does bring the sport into disrepute, in my opinion. And another little bit of irony there, a lot of these guys that they're talking about, both Larry and Russell criticising them, that they're customers of Larry's. Larry, of course, has a very good big business building cars and selling components to these, you know, once-a-year privateers. So, yeah, they definitely should watch what they're saying. If they get these people offside too much, it's going to hurt Larry's business.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting points. And, of course, the other part of it is that a number of the guys they're talking about, you know, obviously they say, well, I haven't seen them in any of the V8 races during the year, but a number of them had been competing in other categories, such as, you know, the Australian Sports Sedan Championship, the GDP Championship, and quite a range of other competitions, including a number of teams that had been running in the Konica Series during the year. So it is a case of, you know, that because the fact is they don't see them turning up to the regular Shell Championship race meetings, but they're running in a range of other categories, quite often with machinery just as comparable to the V8 supercars, if not the next step down.
Yeah, we operate in a world of free trade and all equal opportunity. I think really the answer is to build the series even more so that the 50-something car cutoff is actually cutting them off at a competitive level. If they really want 70 cars, then all of those
Peter, I'm sorry, but your phone is dying on it, so we might have to leave you there. And it sounds like he left.
Yeah, so it's the old story that the old phone system works only so far.
All right, we might just have a look at a few other quick sporting stories.
Wakefield Parkway, I think that's it. That's the one I have something going. Yes, the news this week that Wakefield Park near Goulburn will get another round of the BOC Gases Super Touring Championship. They'll be getting around as part of a weekend celebrations for Australia Day in Goulburn next year, and so they'll be making a return for the seventh round of the series on January 26th to 28th. And this will take the place of the Sandown round, which was scheduled for January 6th to 7th. Apparently, Sandown, having got their V8 supercar race back, immediately dropped the Super Tourers like a hot potato. So that was an interesting one there. But anyhow, Wakefield Park there, and naturally enough, they're completely not really wrapped, because what it does, it means that they continue their improvements for the circuit. They'll have another chance to get some experience and practice in place before they get the Konica Series round in February, I think it is. So, looking great for them. So the Super Series will be back, and apparently going to have a really big day there, and I reckon that it's going to be quite an interesting round of the championship.
Yeah, a lot of cars coming back to the series that might not have been at NOLA, which of course the television coverage, once again, fantastic. I know that I was turning away from Bathurst for a little while there with, you know, the 48 pace car going out on the grid. Going out on the track, I sort of did find myself channel hopping to the BTCC, the DTM, and even the Mitsubishi. I ended up
watching the Mitsubishi Mirage race with Paul Morris and John Henderson and Mr. Luff & Co. was very, very interesting racing.
Oh, I like when he punted him through the pit. If you really want to see some racing, just... Well,
apparently they reckon that they are going to run a few more of those things, where they're going to put a lot of the Super Touring guys all into the one-mate cars and let them have a go, and I reckon that's just more great fun and
well,
great
it
racing.
Makes sense, because it does make good television, and they're there. It's not as if they're kind of flying in for it. Look, we might turn our attention now, Colin, and we might turn our attention to the Americas, because it is the final weekend of NASCAR racing over there at the moment, and it also is a final race for quite a number of people, Darrell Waltrip being one of them. But Bill Elliott, he became one of the biggest stars in NASCAR, driving the number 9 Ford for Harry Melling. That combination won the 1988 Winston Cup Championship, the 85 and 87 Daytona 500, and the inaugural $1 million bonus for the series sponsor by winning three of NASCAR's big four races in a single season. Elliott set speed records in the Melling Thunderbirds and that are unapproachable in this day of carburetor restrictor plates. At the Napa 500 on Sunday at the Atlanta Motor Speedway, it will be at end of that era. Elliott has left the team, of course, following the 91 season to start his own team. The Michigan businessman and team owner Harry Melling died in May of 1999, and following Sunday's race, Harry's son Mark will switch to Dodge for the 2001 season. To pay tribute to Ford for its support of the number 9 Taurus, now driven by Stacey Compton. It will carry decals honouring the car's manufacturer. Simply put, thank you, said Melling. We have been very fortunate to be able to work with a great company like Ford for so many years. They have played a major role in our success over the past 20, so we feel it's appropriate to honour them as this chapter of the team's history comes to a close. Elliot, who also is switching from Ford to Dodge, is giving up his own team following a season-ending race drive to go into the new Ray Everingham team. And, of course, those years with Harry Melling were amazing, Elliot said. We accomplished more than we ever dreamed we could, but everything changes as time goes by, and still I'm proud of what we did for Ford and what they did for us.
Actually, while we're still talking about the USA, one of the interesting little stories popping up this week is the fact there's talk that Havoline Texaco is possibly going to sue Newman Haas Racing over the loss of Michael Andretti. Apparently the marketability...
So this is following on from our story last week.
Last week. And this is very interesting in the fact that apparently the basis is that part of the contract deal, the marketability of the team and the Texaco Havoline sponsorship was resting on the Andretti name, and the fact that the Newman Haas team failed to keep Michael Andretti, the company now believes that there might be a breach of the sponsorship contract, particularly since that the drivers and what they also recognise the all-American image of the Andretti and the team, and apparently with the new foreign drivers that the team has signed on, they believe they can't use that American image marketability, which is what that they're putting their sponsorship in for. So I think that's going to be something very interesting to watch over the coming weeks to see how that develops.
Because they were more than happy when Nige came on board. They ran some quite heavy advertising campaigns with Mario, AJ Foyt and Nige all being major part of the campaign.
Well, so the thing is, the interesting part is that Texaco Havoline, of course, are in the UK and Europe, whereas where they're getting their current drivers from, I don't think Texaco is.
Brazil?
Brazil, which is a couple of different brands of petrol.
Well, and oils as well. Look, in the NASCAR Winston Cup Championship, that was the end. Colin, thanks for being with us once again this week.
No worries.
Look, whilst Pontiac Grand Prix, which has clinched its third NASCAR Winston Cup Championship, and its first since 1989, thanks to Bobby Labonte, they can set a NASCAR modern-day standard for itself this weekend if it has victory in Atlanta. Pontiac has 11 wins so far this season, matching the highest number of wins in a season that was set in 1993. Tony Stewart, Labonte's teammate at Joe Gibbs Racing, is coming into this race after having great success right throughout the season and has had a season-leading 6 wins, whilst Labonte has had 4, and Ward Burton having 1 in the Cat Pontiac, I think it was. And, well, it is going to be also an era-ending run for a lot of different things at the Napa 500. It will mark ESPN's final NASCAR race broadcast as Fox, NBC and Turner take over the television rights next season. Now, ESPN carried its first flag-to-flag coverage of races from Atlanta in November of 1981. It will also feature the final races team of broadcasters Ned Jarrett, Bob Jenkins, Benny Parsons, Dr. Jerry Punch, Bill Weber, Matt Yoakum. And as Dr. Jerry Punch said, it will be very difficult to walk away when he finishes his victory lane interview in Atlanta with the fire suit on for the last time after 18 consecutive years. He's going to have a hard time. He is going to have a hard time working out what to do with all the great memories. Meanwhile, Fox has hired Mike Joy, a 30-year motorsport broadcasting veteran, as the principal race announcer for its premier season of broadcasting NASCAR events. Joy will be joined by retiring driver and three-time series champion Dale Waltrip and long-time crew chief Larry McReynolds in the booth for 2001, and the races will be broadcast by Fox, FX and Fox Sports. So certainly a few different breakups there. You might ask, what's going on the racetrack then? Well, Jeff Gordon finished what was a down year for him and his hopes of ending the season on a springboard into the 2001 championships. So far, so good. They went out and set fastest time. Gordon driving the